Thank you, Milan and Richard. And, just, you know, their own sort of life real life application of the ways that, you know, among all kinds of different expressions, and you no doubt have your own, but I just thought having them offer some ways in which their own practices informed their sort of service and work in the world, and conversely, the way their service work in the world contributes to and informs practice. So, what I thought we would do to go on with is something called the goldfish bowl. And it's a way to have a conversation in a group like this without just having kind of views or expressions flying in from all around. So, just a minute to explain the form. We'll put four chairs in the middle. And it's an opportunity just to explore or speak about anything that's alive for you from what the reflections that we've offered and your own contributions to that. It might be in the form of reflections, it might be in the form of questions that are alive for you, it may be in the form of initiatives that you can imagine or would like to support or would like to initiate, etc. And so if you want to express something or respond to something someone else expresses, you can just come and join this little conversation of the three or four chairs in the middle. And then at some point, when it's enough, you can leave. And when there's a spare chair, then anybody else can take the chair. And the only request is that you don't leave as soon as you've spoken. Right? So you don't just say your piece and then withdraw so that nobody can respond. So if you speak and then you wait until at least one other person in the circle has spoken before you take your leave. Is the form clear? Good. So, how many spare chairs? Oh, we have
some
spare chairs.
Chair handlers.
There's two back there.
And we'll wait till there's at least three before. So please, to facilitate some conversation, please feel free. It's David, yes.
No, I'll. What do I just say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you sit down. You wait for one or two to join you, and then
okay.
Explore together.
Come on, guys. Sit there with us. We'll be here all night. Someone else, please.
I'm going to come in, but I don't understand.
That's okay. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, okay, great, thanks. So something that spoke to me, which a topic that Martin offered, was the thing about Sangha and building it. And I'm literally, you know, 12 hours or 24 hours off retreat. And it's the second time I've been to Guy House, and the same thing happened. Is basically, you get to the end of the retreat, and then you get to talk to people, and then you leave, and then it's just kind of like it's very empty and very weird, I find. Maybe it's a culture, I don't know. But when I go to retreats I've been to retreats in the U.S., and everyone, there's like an email list for everyone, and you get. And on one of the retreats that I went to, they built a Facebook private community, which was volunteering, or you can opt in if you want to be included. So, you know, there's a retreat that I attended almost 4 years ago, and everyone is still in contact. That's like 500 people still in contact with each other. And so, I don't know what it is, but then how it can shift, but I just thought that was something.
Did you not feel empowered to propose that yourself? Or
I actually proposed it the first time, and then it was a very empty response. It was kind of like, well, this is how we do things, and we'll consider it. And I actually even offered to do it for them. I was like, look, I'll do it for you, and you'd have to do anything. And it's entirely opt-in, and so it's not like everyone's going to get spammed or, you know. Mm. And then it kind of dissipated and that was it.
So I agree with you. How would you feel about, you know, like someone approached you and said, yeah, let's meet up on Facebook and continue the conversation?
I think initially, to Martin's point earlier, it's quite a British thing to want to keep an experience as a personal experience and not really share it. But and you know, I've been in these situations before, and people propose a meetup, and I've probably been guilty of not engaging in it after. But the times that I have done, I found that actually, you know, it's not somebody, it's not being forced upon you, it's not saying you have to kind of meet up and speak with these people and carry on talking to them. It quite naturally kind of filters down into a conversation with one or two people at a meeting, or actually from one of the London Insight things that I went to about a year ago, I was in contact with two people that I met there. Not regularly, but we have a three-way email chain. I don't know any of the other people that they know, vice versa. But every once in a while we email each other around a similar kind of theme, and it's just it's nice, it's enjoyable when that email comes in. I might never actually see them again, but I think it's a positive thing.
Because I practice with people who don't live in London.
Yeah.
I have a friend, you know, I practiced with her this morning. She lives in Abu Dhabi at the moment, and you know, just basically, you know, ring her up on all Google Hangouts or it could be Skype, could be whatever, and he said, "Do you have time to sit?" You know, he says, yeah, and then you just basically sit, and you're basically, you know, you're on one end, they're on one end,
yeah.
And you could be because, you know, space is, you know, is space really an issue? It's time, really, that is the, you know, is the, well, at least for me, time has more meaning than space, you know, so that's one thing I'm thinking. But maybe it's just, you know, who I am. I mean, don't know, you seem to be more, sort of saying it can be a physical or a virtual issue for you.
Yeah.
How would you feel about that? Is saying that more of a physical or a virtual thing?
I can't answer that question.
Okay.
I don't understand the question.
You don't understand the question.
I do feel that there's something quite bleak about the, you know, the four-day retreats, the Vipassana retreats, and the one-day retreats, and I sort of feel as though there's a fear of mixing it up a bit. You know, why not talk at lunchtime? You know, when we all share our food, it's as if something that it'll get too messy, or you know, that we'll be too aware of each other. There's a sort of remoteness that silence creates that I don't think is necessary. I mean, here we are, surrounded by all these people as though we're on stage, and it's not killing us, and it's not, it's not killing them either. So I think it's I really appreciate the whole premise of this meeting, because it's about, you know, how do we do these two quite separate things.
No, I agree. I think there's been an identity created about what retreat means, and that for some reason there are these lines that are drawn that are like, You know, why would I give people my email, or are they going to spam me, or do they want to date me, or do they want to, you know, like, it's weird, right? So there's all these, identities created.
Going into what guys were saying before, and activism, activism, you know, is defines itself as well, being active and inputting and doing things rather than being passive. If you're, you know, one of the themes of this is trying to connect Dharma and activism in different situations, then I think, as Martin alluded to at the start, that what you're saying about that sort of individual passive practice doesn't necessarily lead itself to that. She reminds me, I was thinking of a little anecdote. I don't know if this is a real experiment or not, but I can remember somebody telling it to me about a lady in New York walking down the street and getting mugged. Mm-hmm. And there's two different situations. There's one where the street is busy and full of people, hundreds of people everywhere, and nobody does anything. And then there's the other situation where she's walking down a street with two other people in it, or maybe even just one, and that one person suddenly rushes to attention to do something about it, because in the first situation, there's lots of other people around, you don't feel that you need to take a role in the situation because somebody else will. Whereas when you're left on your own, you're kind of somehow stimulated to take action.
Yes. Oh, yes, yeah. Mm. It would be good if not everybody leaves at once, but yeah, please feel free.
No, I mean, I said my piece.
Okay. Yeah, it's helpful if there's some fluidity to the comings and goings.
Yeah. So I can walk my feet, I can go.
Go ahead, if you're done. Go ahead.
I'm just basically saying I can stay. I'm still not leave that empty seat, but there you go.
I'd like to touch on your point you made about the political activism and practice. And I've found that as a Green Party activist, is that the compassion from Buddhism has inflected a lot of what I do politically, even if it's not purely, it's completely in the domain. I find that that sort of motivation motivates myself in a lot of the activism I do, in that and animal rights as well, particularly. So whilst it's not necessarily directly part of the Sangha, it is actually inflected in that. So it sort of can have that motivation.
How does your practice link with your political action?
Not directly, but it's just the motivation for it, I think. And what motivates me, say, is, say, on environmental animal rights, it is a compassion when you see suffering and wanting to alleviate the suffering. And that's very... So that may motivate me to do some political activity, to do... demonstrations or whatever, but it's that sort of motivation which is coming through, even if it's not done within a sangha, which is tends to be quite sort of, in a way, sort of quite separate. But I think that sort of does infuse my motivations on that.
What's coming up for me with this discussion is I was thinking it was two separate things, but I've realised it's the same thing. I was thinking that it's this question that you mentioned about mindfulness, secular mindfulness, and I kind of work in that field, but I'm kind of torn with, I come to London Insight, and after we teach 8-week courses, it's like, do I send people to London Insight or not? There's the kind of pictures of the Buddha, and is it, to what extent is it appropriate? And I think it is appropriate, but I think a lot of the questions you were raising in terms of letting go of some of the old the monastic image and that sort of thing, to what extent, how much does one let go of, you know, in the sense of secular mindfulness courses are about, seemingly about meditation as the main thing. What am I trying to say? You talk about dharma practice. To what extent is it about? I don't know. This is probably going to sound ridiculous, but should London Insight kind of a secular mindfulness manages to explore a lot of these things without using the language of Buddhism? And I'm not suggesting London Insight should do that, but it just feels to me like you're talking about letting go of some things within London Insight. How much should be let go of to make it accessible to more people, because there's many people who are doing mindfulness courses who need the support, and this is linking to the second thing, need the ongoing support and the community, and that doesn't really exist, and should it be made accessible to them? So that kind of links to my second point, which is a personal point of my why I'm here, why one of the reasons I came to come here, which is, and it links to what you're saying, how does our practice fit with the way we act in our lives, and as you've been talking about, how to make there not be a tension there, because I feel like there's a tension there, even though I work in secular mindfulness, and I think that my mindfulness means that I'm kinder to others, and I do all these things, I still feel like there's some tension there. So I think those two things link, because as mindfulness grows in society and things, how are these people brought into what we're talking about tonight, so it's not just a kind of a meditation practice that doesn't persist and doesn't go to a deep level. So it's a few threads that kind of
you speak to a lot of the things that I was going to say, and rather than talk theoretically, a proposition, which is, would you like to set up a meetup group for people who are interested in practice and life, whether they're Buddhist or from secular mindfulness? Because I think that's the answer, is not to worry about the institution, but to create the practice. Because institutions have value, and they're very, very important, but they're not the only way to practice. And I wonder if perhaps we can create something that's bigger and more fluid and doesn't have so many rules, but it's more of a community. And we just give, we're so blessed with, you know, like the internet. And this whole, we have a culture now around meetup groups where they're kind of normal.
Yeah.
And we could just start there.
I was thinking earlier on, we could create Dharma cafes. You know, you have desk cafes. I went to one the other day.
Amazing.
A few days ago, and it was fantastic. And you know, Dharma Cafe, just spontaneously or semi-spontaneously arranged to meet up somewhere local. You know.
But is it even Dharma Cafe? Because Dharma puts off a lot of people, that word, and I just wonder.
Call it something else. It doesn't have to be Dharma. But
it's just when I listen to some of your talk, when some of Martin's talks and things, it's not. It's just about reality. It's about life. It's about awareness, and then. So I just think, I'm not trying to, I don't know, I think, yeah, just the word, but actually I would say in response to you that I'm not sure that you can set something up without having clarity about what it.
Clarity, sure, not an institutional framework.
I think the Day Long Retreats are very very good for London, for a lot of people who are racing around and very busy and busy working and going on the tube all the time, for having the sort of one day retreats which are in silence is also, I find, very refreshing as well. So it's something it's worth keeping and maybe expanding rather than thinking changing completely.
I also wanted to say I've had an experience of when I think of my attitude towards homeless people in the street who are asking for money. I can see a difference between when I haven't been meditating and I rationalise to the nth degree. You know, I can go through all kinds of, according to my mood, or you know, all kinds of rationalisation as to why I'm giving or why I'm not giving, why I feel like giving, why I don't feel like giving. You know, maybe they can play really well, so they don't need me because they're going to be successful anyway. You know, they're playing good music, whatever, or. You know, this guy might spend it on drugs and alcohol, so what? You know, if that's what he needs to do, who am I to judge? That kind of thing. And when I've been practicing, none of that happens. It's just spontaneous. You know, I just give without thinking about it. I think, of course, you know, why not? There's no this pushing and pulling and what, you know, should I, shouldn't I?
I resonate with you. I take the stance of not giving because I don't know why I think that it might end up, you know, drink and drugs. But I'm always a bit like I don't feel totally comfortable. I don't feel comfortable with that decision either. So.
I just feel really excited about all this
tonight. Yeah, I think that meditation is very much about the inward experience. But what I discovered from doing a retreat over the new year is with the metta practice, which I really resonate with, it's about bringing it out and sharing it with those you come into contact with. And I think that's just as important. And it would be great to create, I do find that there's a lack in London of a sangha, of a regular place where one can meet like-minded people. Because I did meet someone last a year or so ago who's part of a Buddhist practice, but it's very kind of devotional and it's a bit heavy. And every time I spoke to this friend, she's like, come and spend a whole day doing this. And it made me quite resistant. So I think it's something that's more subtle is better for everybody. It's more something that more people can take part in and feel that they can be safe in that environment and share their life experiences of living in the city, because sometimes living in the city is really harsh I find, and it's nice to be reminded that people care, and people, there's compassion and empathy around you, so creating that environment somehow, I don't know, maybe in central London or regionally. And also to speak, because I did go to Sangha quite close to where I live, and there wasn't enough conversation. And I think it's really good to feel that you can share your inner experiences and your outer experiences as well.
Oh, I just feel like I want to kick the ball in the air.
Yeah, there's another empty chair as well.
While you were talking, I was thinking, you know, how can we mix things newly, like new mixtures of things? Like, I live in Folkestone now, and we have the highest rate of teenage pregnancy in the country, apparently. I've only just moved there, so when I say we, has the highest rate. And I was thinking, how can I engage these young kids who are getting each other pregnant and in something that is mindful and somehow storytelling, you know, about having their kids and their experience and you know, new combinations of mindfulness with for example storytelling. That's a discussion. Sorry.
Something that's kind of reachable for them, something involving music, something.
Yeah. Or improvisation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Some sort of creativity around, as well as the meditation part and discussing, you know, the practices of loving kindness and just observing the body, being in the body, and so on. So that grounds people, because they go very much in. They're quite heady, young people, and it's a lot about the ego and showing off and proving themselves. So they've kind of come to a more centered position in themselves.
I mean, also, I've recently done a TEFL training, and I found, you know, and I was learning German, I was finding enormous anxiety of being in a language learning context, and then thinking, how could that become informed by mindful practice? How can we kind of, you know, put that ingredient into things to, you know, so that.
I wanted to share a couple of things. I don't know your names. I've got it. Like the stuff you talk about, you know, the tension. And for me, you know, that is the juice. That's life. That's the richness of existence. I don't know if that's what I was picking up when you were speaking. And it's a little bit. For me, it's strange being here, because I only for about 4 or 5 years. But I was a member of the. I used to go up to King Arthur's School and go on the day long retreats and that kind of stuff. And I stopped going because of the lack of sangha, and the fact that I really wanted to talk about. The reason I loved Martin's retreats was that they were. I want to talk about my life. I don't want to talk about cerebral matter, consciousness piece. I want to talk about the embodied down my life, the shit of this tension, the rubber hitting the road. And for me, the reason that I left this community was because it didn't exist. And I know that I can no longer participate in spiritual groups which don't do that. If you're not talking to the heart, I think we should honour the consciousness dimension. I think it's vital and important for this experience to be having. Please, I mean, bring it on, really, absolutely. But that element of of the real life, you know, either the wonder or the kind of terrible, you know, the tragedy of our broken existence. And I think, I don't know how much time I know Martin has, but I'm quite connected into various Buddhist and other spiritual groups in San Francisco, and my experience of them is that they're just so juicy in terms of this, like, love and sex and work and all the stuff, you know, all that stuff. It's like, it's just so juicy, and I feed off that. I can almost feel it in my body. I need to feed off that, because that for me is what life is. And any practice that doesn't have that, I can no longer be part of.
There's something very dry about the way we're practicing this control.
Just one last thing. Sorry. I think there's a way in which that's true. And there's a way in which that's not true. I think there are many spiritual movements in this country that are not like that. I feel that really quite important to say that, because I'm a member of some of them. So I think insight is greatest strength is these wonderful teachers. I mean, the amazing teachers that insight has, the amazing retreats Guy has. But it's great, like for so many, its greatest strength, I think, is also its greatest weakness.
And I'd like to make a plea for not everything to be via the internet, basically. That's one of my bees in my bonnet, because I feel it excluded by that. I'm not on Facebook, and I don't want to be on Facebook, let alone Twitter and any of that. Email is about my limit. Maybe a generational thing.
Have a loose limit.
Well, I'm with you on the internet thing, because I also find it an amazing way to share. But there is an ability for it to be quite... virtual, so it's not really, I don't feel it has the juice, the sort of realness of what is being felt. I've never been to an insight thing before. I came here because I did an online, funnily enough, course with you, through a friend of mine put me in touch with it, which I found really helpful, because it was, even though it was virtual, it was actually a really, there wasn't a way that you could become part of the Sangha and interact. I couldn't get my head around, because I'm not very computer savvy. I did find the being able to listen to the teachings of, whatever the right way of describing, really real, actually. It was very, very real. And I think that I feel that it would be wonderful to have a community. I don't even live in London anymore, or even in England, but I'm here to just for a moment. And I found it incredibly shocking and distressing being here for the last few months. All the things that people have talked about, the massive wealth discrepancies, the fact that my neighbours on my street, supposed neighbours of where my family have lived, don't interact with me. I'm the sort of nutcase who sort of says good morning and wants to have some kind of human contact. I find that incredibly distressing that we do live in this incredible society where we've got all these different people with so much wisdom from all over the world that have come, and so much that they can share, and actually, here it comes, it really distresses me. So I think that there's so much potential for change amongst all those people once you can get past the virtual just screens, the sort of obsessive. The expression of who people are, it's just really shocking. So I think Sangha is a really wonderful thing, if it can be a real thing where it's fluid and it's open to all expressions of everything. Sorry.
Okay. I felt really pulled to come in, because what's coming up for me is I've lived in London 21 years, I'm Australian, but the last 10 years, even on the news is running like this, we are reaching a very overcrowded city, and we're talking about Sangha, we're talking about community, and you couldn't have more people in one place. And you know, this Britishness is because, especially in London, and I know you shared about, I've gone to retreats at Guy House too, and we saw the overstimulation coming, Melody, in a little way, and how we, you know, I think we're all here trying to save ourselves from, I don't know, I'm just, it's just been an issue for me that's aware, and I hear you responding to the side effects of just, you know, too many, you know, people just overstimulate, and that's why, you know, we love hanging out with Martin and London Insight, and it's all great to take a break. But I think there's a real issue here. Like, I do think London is suffering, and I don't know, I mean, we talk about having internet connections and creating groups. I think talking about it and nights like this is really, really vital. Because everyone is moving out. I mean, financially, you know, there's a big issue here in London, and we need to stand up. And one and two people can change. I just, you know, I just think it's going to be interesting times. But I just want to, you know, it has changed a lot, London. I mean, as I say, I came here to be a musician, but the last few years, it's really challenging city to live in, and yeah, welcome some ideas, and it's really exciting that maybe a small group of people could change this whole lack of integration that's really, we're heading towards pretty crazy fast.
Okay, so there's just, I just want to give the chance if there's anybody, because there's not much time left, so I just want to give the opportunity if there's anybody who hasn't been in the circle yet to take the opportunity while it's there.
I think it's quite interesting when you were talking about teachers and the part they can play, not that it's solely their responsibility, but this is my first time I've come to a London Insight event. I've been practicing for a while. I've tried out different traditions and like. I don't think I've met one teacher who's talked about. You always get the encouragement: don't make your practice just sitting practice. Take it out into the world. But there's very rarely any discussion or encouragement from a teacher. What that actually looks like beyond trying to be kind to people and compassionate to people. Mm-hmm. So I think it'd be nice if there's a few more examples of teachers like yourself taking that message out there, because I think the Sangha idea is good as well, because we can start doing that on our own. So like you were suggesting, like a group and through our relationships and the like. But I think teachers can perhaps provoke a bit more of getting Sangha's discussion in that sort of way, because they'll naturally talk about that if they're sort of led in that direction a little bit with teachers. Not that being overly critical of teachers, but especially if you look at like the Christian church, I think there's far more of, I don't know, bishops and stuff in the news will talk about issues of the day and they'll put their view on it and say that things need to be done and the like. I think they're also, because we're largely a Christian country, and so my background before Buddhism is more rooted in that, but I think they're more to do with activism and going out and making that change. But we always seem to, yes, you need to sort out the inner thing, but that does need to, and some of that, if you don't sort yourself out, then you can't give in the right way. So again, some of what you were saying, but it would be nice to explore this a bit more, perhaps with like-minded people, and see what we can do together.
So feel free to, and that'll be the last sort of comments we have time for, Martin.
I think London's quite an interesting place, actually, because I heard what you said about
under pressure that creates opportunities like this to come together. And for me, what's interesting is the connection between when we come together in silence and the possibility of connecting out of silence. So I find those silence retreats as a way of connecting with my awareness, and awareness is the foundation for awakening to the kind of social, political questions that Martin was talking about. You know, the more you awaken to what's going on, the more your practice helps you to be different in the world. And yet it's such a shame that when we come together in silence, as you were saying, you know, the possibility of connecting together and building on what we experience seems to dissipate. And for me, the risk is the practice becomes a kind of a very sort of individualist thing. I've sat in groups, you know, where we haven't been in silence, and people have talked about how the practice, you know, just helps them cope, and they turn off the news because it's all too depressing. And in a way, that's the opposite of awakening. It's just a shutting away into oneself, and your practice is like building an insulation around you. And what's excited me about the conversation here today is the possibility of breaking down that barrier and connecting in some kind of awakened collective purpose.